I found when I'm having the most fun with the content I'm creating, that content tends to be the most creative, and it tends to be the things that most people watch and relate to. And it's probably because I'm creating it from a human, I'm coming from the perspective like, oh, this is content I want to create. So there's probably other people out there who want to see this content if there's other people out there like me.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to My Social Life. I'm your host, Jacob Kelly. As always, today's podcast is powered by TrueFan. Before we get into today's conversation with Ronnie Chalvis, make sure you subscribe to the podcast, leave us a positive rating and review, and share this episode with just one friend. And now today on the podcast, like I said, we are joined by Ronnie Chalvis, who is better known online as Ronnie Street Stunts. He has over 1.3 million subscribers on YouTube. How did he get there? Let's find out. Hey, Ronnie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Jacob. Good to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. And where I like to start every podcast is I want to know, who was Ronnie before YouTube?
Ronnie before YouTube was a kid who just aspired to do cool things. I loved skateboarding. I loved when I discovered parkour. I loved learning how to flips. And to an extent, I loved being in school and showing off, you know, and doing tricks in school. And so I feel like YouTube became a natural extension of that, that ability to kind of like, look what I've been able to learn and do. And for me, it was also a big thing that changed my life, was getting into parkour and then eventually doing YouTube. But we can get there. But yeah, but before all that, you know, I was a pretty shy kid in school, and getting into sports like skateboarding and parkour kind of helped me become more confident in myself and just kind of find a new place for myself in the world that previously, you know, as in that weird, probably every, you know, young teenager kind of experiences, but, you know, kind of unsure about what I'm meant to be. And that's kind of where I found myself.
I think parkour is an interesting one for you to get into, considering, correct me if I'm wrong, but growing up, you were afraid of heights, right?
Right. Yeah. I had a lot of fears as a kid. And a big part of that for me was at one point, I had this desire to overcome fears. And the first one was overcoming my fear of height. And it was all inspired by the first Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movie, seeing him leap off buildings and perform these amazing acrobatics. You know, even though he's a superhero, I knew, like, it just seemed so cool to be able to do that. So I wanted to overcome my fear of heights so I could accomplish at least being comfortable being on tall buildings.
And you're entirely self-taught, right?
Yeah.
And you started at 15 years old, I believe.
Yep. When I was 15 years old, is when I first discovered parkour itself on online videos. YouTube wasn't around yet. It was a website called Stupid Videos or something like that. And I just saw these guys from France who were jumping around performing these amazing stunts that looked a lot like Spider-Man. So it was very reminiscent of, you know, what inspired me in the first place to want to overcome my fears. And so I, seeing that and seeing that it was possible to do those things in real life, just inspired me to start trying moves in my own backyard and just watching the videos and then going in my backyard, trying to replicate it. I had an old mattress my mom let me use to throw out in the backyard and get all dirty to just huck my body on and see what flips I could try and learn. But yeah, it was all just a self-taught journey through progressions, trying not to wreck myself along the way.
And so you got on YouTube really early, from what I can tell. I think it was like the Ronster82 account goes all the way back to like 2008. So what led to you getting on YouTube so early?
I think I had the desire I remember kind of what started that is the parkour community at the time was very small. No one really knew what parkour was, but we, you know, through online forums, we would find each other and kind of talk about parkour and what we're doing. And we would share videos with each other of either new moves we're learning or kind of little demo reels of how good we've gotten at parkour. So that's kind of how it started. I would put together these demo reels of what I've learned and what I've gotten good at to basically share with the parkour community. But then I also had this kind of intention in the back of my head that maybe one day I'd be able to do stunt work. So I also saw it as like, you know, promoting it as a way to be a performer in some form.
Yeah, because it was, I think it was American Ninja Warrior, like your audition would have been on YouTube as well, like all that stuff came through too. And so you said your mom had given you a mattress to kind of practice on in the backyard, an old mattress. But what did your friends and family kind of think? One, you're starting to do this parkour thing, you're putting your body at risk, and now you're also filming it and putting it on the internet. Like, was your family and friends, were they supporting you during that, those early days, or were they kind of skeptical?
Yeah, honestly, I had a lot of support from my parents when I first started doing it, which I'm extremely grateful for because I didn't necessarily expect that. I did come from skateboarding before that, which is, in my opinion, a bit more dangerous, or can be, depending on how you approach it. And so I think for them, they, you know, it wasn't anything much different than that. But they also, what they saw was how passionate I became about that. And my dad was into a lot of sports and very athletic. And so he would try and get me into all these sports that just never stuck. I never had a big interest in all these different sports, but then I discovered parkour and I became very passionate about it, where I was training diligently. And so my dad saw that and just probably thought it was really good to see, and just wanted to encourage me to keep kind of pursuing that. And what's funny is he even started doing it with me as he saw the moves I was learning. He's like, oh, that looks fun. And then he would come out and try and do it with me.
And so there was no real intent in the beginning to, like, quote unquote, become I don't even know if the word YouTuber was a word back in 2008. It's like, that wasn't your intent at the time, right?
Oh, not at all. Yeah. I had no idea that one day there would be a way to make money making YouTube videos. It was purely just, you know, a way for me to share what I was doing with the world. And also maybe one day it would lead to job opportunities as a stunt performer.
And so when did that switch happen for you? Was it the time you kind of linked up and started filming videos with Devin Graham? Was that kind of the time when you realized, like, oh, there's potential for this to be more than that?
That was exactly how it played out. In 2012, I met Devin Graham through a mutual friend, because Devin was looking for a parkour athlete based out of Utah who he could film this idea he had for an Assassin's Creed parkour video. And so he reached out to me and we talked about it, and I thought it was an awesome idea. I was down to make it happen. And I saw it as a good opportunity to once again promote myself for stunt work. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to kind of revamp what I'm doing on YouTube, because maybe I can get more followers that way. And so I created a new channel, kind of a fresh channel, fresh start, and started creating some tutorial content so that when people came to my channel from his channel, they would have a reason to stay, to be like, oh, this guy is actually teaching people how to learn parkour safely. And it wasn't just a matter of, like, you know, look what I can do. And also, I always in the back of my head worried about kids trying it on their own without the proper training. And I worried about kids injuring themselves. And so starting the tutorials was also a part of trying to help kids learn how to do it safely. So I'm like, there's actually a method to learn this safely, like I did. I was never a real daredevil. I kind of started with these very small baby steps when I first started learning parkour, and just progressed from there. And so that's how I started pushing videos on my own YouTube channel, knowing this Assassin's Creed video was coming out. And yeah, that was pretty much the tip of the iceberg there. Once that video came out, I think within the first couple of weeks, the video had gained like 10 million views. Ton of people were sharing, you know, everyone loved Assassin's Creed, and parkour was kind of this new up and coming trending sport. So the combining of them was kind of a perfect timing at that time. And, in the first 2 weeks, I gained like 10,000 subscribers as well on my YouTube channel. So it was definitely like the best jump start to YouTube I could have had.
No kidding. And especially like when you first started your channel, it's not like you just started doing parkour videos. You were doing Assassin's Creed parkour videos on your own channel, which probably benefited from everybody searching up like Assassin's Creed parkour. So they're probably going to see Devin's videos, but they're also going to see all of yours as well underneath that, with your tutorials in the costume and everything. And so I think I looked those videos today, like, and I remember watching those videos when they came out. Like, I think I would have been like, probably I'd have been around 15 when the first one came out, because I think the first one is like, it's like 70 million, and then the second one is 100 million. And like, so you said the first one got you 10,000 subscribers off the first one. And then when he asks you to do the second one, I'm assuming there's no hesitation, right? And you get to go over to France and film that one and everything.
Yeah. Well, so the second one I did was actually for Assassin's Creed 3, which is Native American based video game. So I did that one in like local forests and stuff. And then the third one he asked me to do was the one in France. And that was epic, being able to go to actual Paris rooftops with some local parkour guys there and have that whole experience.
That's awesome. I read in, I think it was in an article or an interview or something, that you said Dem was really influential in your life, and because of him, it allowed you to be successful on YouTube. What did he, like, obviously from just the carryover from that video of people coming over to your channel, subscribing, but like, what else did Devin teach you about YouTube that really helped you kind of propel yourself?
Being around Devin, he was very passionate about what he did. He loved filmmaking. That was his passion. And he wanted to, he had an idea for concepts and ideas, and he just put a lot of effort into it. And so a lot of what I got from him was seeing that passion, that drive, that hard work he put into it, and then trying to do that with my own twist with parkour. I did a little bit of filmmaking, but more so I focused on the parkour element. So my focus became, you know, how can I take that passion and do what Devin is doing with his YouTube channel, with his videos, but with my angle of doing parkour videos. And that became a combination of tutorials and doing more themed parkour videos. And so I definitely took a lot of that away from him, but also we became friends where anytime I just had questions about how YouTube works or, you know, doing certain things, like I would ask him, and he was always happy to give me tips and advice on doing different things on YouTube, you know, kind of figuring it out in that early time, understanding how to post regularly and how to create sort of viral content, because that's what he was good at the time, was just creating content that would go viral. And so I took a lot of inspiration from him for that. And another guy named Cameron Manwaring, who had previously worked with Devin Supertramp, he kind of came over and started helping me manage my YouTube channel for about a year and helped me launch some really big viral successful videos on my YouTube channel. So if I were to say what a large part of my success was on YouTube, I'd have to say it was the collaborations with other YouTube channels and people who are able to have that expertise and knowledge to really help me out and see the value that I had in my skills. And so they were willing to take that chance to help me create something with what I was doing.
And I think the key thing there too, is it's not like you just went to Devin, you were like, help me grow this channel. Like, you were able to provide value with your unique skill set. And so that's the lesson for a lot of smaller creators. It's like, you can work with these bigger creators, but you just have to be able to provide a unique piece of value that they can't get from someone else. And for you, that happened to be parkour.
Exactly. Well, and on top of that, like, I wasn't always working with big channels. After that, I was still collaborating with much smaller channels, even smaller than mine, who at the time they had more filmmaking experience than I did. And I had, you know, more views on my YouTube channel or subscribers, or I had parkour skills. And so that's how I would collaborate with these other YouTube channels who weren't necessarily bigger, but I saw value in them because I need someone to help me film what I'm doing with parkour. So let's collaborate and then we both get something out of it. So yeah, same thing. It's, you know, what do I have to offer to, you know, more successful channels? And then at the same time, you know, there's people who may have smaller channels, but they still have value and things they can bring to the table that I look for as well.
No, 100%. And so you said that the first Assassin's Creed video did like 10 million views in the first couple of weeks. You got your 10,000 subscribers. Did your growth, did it stay kind of consistent after that? Or did it kind of have an initial spike and then a bit of a drop off?
There was a lot of spikes throughout my growth. There was always a consistent growth because those videos have still to this day have a consistent growth. So I know I've gained some of my consistent growth has come from those videos, but there was definitely initial spike and then a big drop off and then just that steady trickle of growth. And then pretty much anytime I would do a collaboration with Devin or Freddie W or other big YouTube channels I'd work with, there would always be that spike, drop down, or my occasional viral video would give me another spike, you know. And the goal was like, for me, was every time that the spike would drop and then kind of steady out again, was that level was that higher than the previous level after the previous spike. So my goal was to always just have a higher level out after each spike, which I was able to do for quite a few years.
Is that still hard though, with kind of the fluctuating the up and down of your growth? Like just to like mentally, it's like it's everything's amazing woman and then everything's going down the next. Like, is that hard for you as a creator to kind of handle?
Yeah, definitely. It's quite the literal roller coaster mentally following the views and the subscribers, because that's a big part of tracking it. So I know what to do more of or what to do less of. And it's always just a roller coaster of emotions to see that rise, you know, be super stoked. And then it's dropping down. It's like, okay, gotta come on, keep it going. But you know, it always drops down to a certain base level and keeps going from there. So it's definitely a roller coaster. But I learn a lot from that process and what to do.
And so what was your first video that went viral? Like not any on anyone else's channel, like the first one on the Ronnie Street Stunts channel that really popped.
Oh man, I'll have to think about that for a minute. I believe it was like a zombie parkour video. No, it wasn't the zombie. That one was a bit later. I did an ice skating parkour video, or like a snow and ice parkour video. Cameron Manwaring, who I mentioned before, he helped me put this one together, and it wasn't anything themed or, you know, interesting that way, but you know, they had a company that was good at kind of getting content seen by the right articles and publishers to kind of help share content. And so we created this cool ice parkour video where I'm doing parkour in the snow, and then you see me jump in ice skates, and I do like a flip on ice skates, do a little bit of parkour on ice skates. So it was a very unique concept. And then with that, they're able to help me kind of push it to different websites to share it. And so I can't remember how many views that video got, but that was one that definitely was one of my first ones to get a lot of views on my own channel.
And you said how Devin and Cameron were able to kind of teach you things to help videos go viral. And I'm assuming getting the video featured by a bunch of different publications helps, but what are some of those other things that you learned from them to help that like helps videos kind of get that boost and go viral?
So a big thing I learned from Cameron is, you have to think about, humans and what do they want? What do they value when they watch a video? And usually they want to be entertained. They want to learn something. There's a few other ones he had that I can't think of off the top of my head. But those were the two I know I took to heart, where like, okay, I want to teach people parkour and I want to entertain people. It was also like inspire and things like that, motivate. Those are the ones I took to heart for my channel because they seemed the most relevant for what I was doing. So it became like catering my content to either entertainment, you know, entertainment that will inspire people, or tutorials that will help people learn parkour and do the things that I'm doing. So that was a big part of it. Other things we would talk about are just general practices with how we put the video together, you know, having a snappy beginning and, you know, the length of the video, especially for parkour content, not going too long, since, you know, there's not a lot more to it than the tricks themselves. And eventually people will just get bored of watching the same thing over and over. So it's kind of finding that balance of having enough content so that YouTube, or having the video long enough so that YouTube likes it, but not too long where people stop watching.
So how do you come up with your ideas, or how did you come up with them back in the day? Was it like sitting down and kind of thinking of like having those categories written out of like inspire, teach, entertain, and trying to make sure your videos hit that, like writing them out on paper? Was it just kind of as you'd go about your day, be like, oh, that'd be a cool idea. Like, what was your creative process like? How'd you come up with the ideas?
Yeah, I would definitely sit down and just have a brainstorming session where I'm just thinking of different ideas. I would do Google searches for things that are trending within movies and video games to see what I could kind of play off of that parkour would fit well with, whether it's to put on a costume and do that, or just look up what people are searching for with parkour tutorials, finding that, oh, people are searching for how to learn parkour. So that became one of my first tutorials, is simply how to start learning parkour. And so I'd take some inspiration from Google, but then a lot of it was just like, what sounds fun for me to do, because a big part of me doing YouTube and kind of transitioning into doing YouTube full time wasn't just that I could make money from it, but it was something that I loved doing and that was fun for me to do. And so I wanted to keep that element of having fun. Once YouTube feels like a grind or a burden, you know, it's not fun anymore, then is it worth doing something that I originally am only doing because I have fun doing it? So I always tried to keep an element of like, what sounds fun to me? Because if it sounds fun to me, then I'm sure there's other people who will think it's fun to watch.
How do you have the awareness to know when it's not getting fun? You know what I mean? Because I feel like so many people, they get just so caught up in the day-to-day and like kind of the hamster wheel of keeping a YouTube channel and posting consistently that like they might not have the ability to step back and look at that higher level and be like, wait, am I still having fun with this? So how do you deploy that level of self-awareness to know when you're not having fun?
I've had two ways of approaching it. One way is I've found some things that I may not think are fun, or some things I may not think are fun, but I know I need to do. I can kind of force myself to adjust my perspective to make it fun. some things are just so boring that I can't totally make them fun. But you know, part of running a business, you're always going to have to do boring things. So at least for me, the money and accounting, you know, all the paperwork stuff, that stuff's not fun for me, but it's, you know, I have to do it to keep it up. And, so there's that element. But then there would be times where I would definitely feel like I'm grinding and kind of stressing myself out because, later on I'm married, I have a couple kids, and I'm supporting my whole family on just my YouTube income. And so there would be times where I wasn't doing it purely for fun because I needed to continue to make money to support my family. And so that definitely adds a level of stress to it, where I'm trying to think too, I feel like what would happen is I would think too hard about it, and I would actually lose some of my creative ability when I would start thinking about it more in terms of, you know, okay, I need to make money, I need to, you know, get more views, whatever it is. There's definitely importance to thinking in those terms, but I could tell when I was only focused on that and wasn't doing it out of my passion and the fun I have to do those things, I just feel like those videos never performed as well, because maybe, you know, maybe there was a sense that my heart wasn't in it or something. I don't know for sure, but there was definitely, I found when I'm having the most fun with the content I'm creating, that content tends to be the most creative, and it tends to be the things that most people watch and relate to. And it's probably because I'm creating it from a human, I'm coming from the perspective like, oh, this is content I want to create. So there's probably other people out there who want to see this content, if there's other people out there like me.
So how do you hit the reset button then when you're in those slumps of not creative, not loving it? What do you do to get out of that?
It's a good question. I feel like I'm still sometimes figuring that out now. I know a lot of the time I would just take a break for a little bit. I would allow myself to, which, you know, probably would hurt my channel to an extent, but I would allow myself to take a break and kind of come back to it and maybe create some different types of content, try and experiment a little bit with different things. Sometimes it was just looking for more ways to have fun. Sometimes it was just like, I was doing so much by myself that I'm like, okay, maybe I can just find a way to do some of this with more friends involved. So I can make it a fun project or fun process. So there was different elements like that, but yeah, I don't know exactly. I can't remember exactly how I would come out of that, except that I feel like there would always be a natural transition out of it because of either being burnt out or, you know, just eventually reaching that point where I hit a wall. I'm like, okay, I need to change things up. And so it's just a sudden light bulb flicks on that tells me I need to, you know, think about things differently.
You mentioned how you also take a break sometimes. And you said the thing that everyone says when they talk about taking a break from YouTube, and that it might hurt my channel, or probably did hurt my channel. But what no one ever thinks about is the inverse of that, where it's like, if you don't take a break, that's now hurting you. You know what I mean? I feel like no one ever makes that makes that distinction where it might hurt your channel, but it's benefiting you. And that's going to help you make better content, like you said, in the long run. And kind of speaking of those shoots and filming the content, like watching your videos, especially like the super viral ones, like they're all really, really well produced. So you're not only kind of supporting your family with your YouTube income, but you're probably investing a solid amount into your videos. I know some have like special effects and stuff. So like, what does that process look like when you have a big concept, like either your Star Wars video or maybe your Deadpool video, and you have to kind of put that together? What does that whole process look like?
Usually those videos were, those were passionate project videos. Those were videos that I knew would take a lot to put together. So they would take a lot of effort, but they were things I wanted to do personally, that I wanted to create personally. Those for me weren't just about the views or trying to create viral content. It was like, okay, this is something I really want to make because it sounds fun and I love the idea of it, the concept I have. And so I'll use the Star Wars parkour video as an example because I'd always been a fan of Jedis and Star Wars. And so, and Jedis do a lot of flips and acrobatics. So I knew that was an easy transition for parkour, but I wanted to create a little bit more of a story for it because in the past, a lot of the videos were just like, oh, I'm in a costume and now I'm running around doing flips and tricks, which apparently people love. But I also wanted to see what would happen if I could incorporate a bit more of a story element. And so I storyboarded this whole concept of basing off of the characters from the recent Star Wars movies, and then creating sort of a parkour chase scene and a battle scene with lightsabers. And my friend Cameron Manwaring helped me come up with the idea of having just a whole bunch of parkour athletes and trickers at the end with lightsabers, just doing a bunch of acrobatics and tricks and fighting to just create a visual spectacle. So, and that sounded like a cool idea. So there was an element of like, okay, how do I incorporate that into the story where we, you know, we have something epic happening at the end, but it's all these random Jedis just showing up at the end. Where did they come from? How do I incorporate them into that story I'm trying to create so that it gives a bit more motivation to the whole video in the first place to be doing parkour in these themed costumes? And so that was the initial inspiration for that video. And then going from there, it was basically finding people who wanted to see something like that happen and wanted to collaborate at the level I was at the time. And so it was finding the right people who could help capture the vision that I had with that project, as well as bringing in some of my other stunt friends. A big help with that was Chris Romrell. He's a stuntman out in Georgia, who I've worked with a lot over the years on a lot of YouTube stuff. And to me, he was always kind of the stunt coordinator because he was like, he had that eye to be like, oh, do this to make it look even cooler or to make it look more smooth or better. You know, he'd give me a lot of tips performance wise. And as well as on the Star Wars parkour video, he really helped me pull together the fight scenes because he had background in doing fight choreography and things like that. So he really helped me bring it together to be kind of he helped me be the glue between the story and the performance. I had the story and the performance, but now how do we mesh it together so it seems like a cohesive piece? And so he was also the Kylo Ren in that video. So at the same time that, you know, we're in the middle of the desert, he's getting hot and sweaty and exhausted, he's also coordinating and helping put this all together. And we're kind of, you know, both doing it together. And so it was kind of crazy that, you know, we were, when you're doing these types of projects, how you're doing so many roles just as yourself, you know, and in a big film production, everyone is very focused on one thing, but in these smaller projects, we have to take on multiple mantles. And so it was an awesome learning experience that way for that specific video, because I was involved more in the filmmaking than I'd ever been before. And yeah, I was just bringing those people together, planning out all the details and seeing what we could make happen in 2 days of filming.
And so like, are you having to pay everyone that's there, or is everyone just kind of volunteering because they believe in this vision of this cool video? Like, how does that all work?
Yeah. So there's it's been different for different people, where some people who are just purely there to help for the project, I would pay them to help out. There were other people where it was sort of a collaboration where it's like, okay, we're doing this together because, you know, I'm promoting their channel and, you know, because of their involvement in it. So in those cases, I wasn't paying them because there was sort of a mutual trade-off. So there were definitely, it depended on basically my relationship with the person, not that I didn't want to pay someone or, you know, anything like that. It was just the nature of the arrangement. You know, if I'm collaborating with someone and they're getting a benefit from it, but then I have to bring on other people who aren't getting a benefit from it, it makes sense to offer them something like a payment to make it worth their time. Some projects were just purely friends willing to help me out, and I would be willing to help them out in the future on their projects. You know, that it was simply that much. But yeah, on some projects I would pay people. Other times it was just simply a form of collaboration.
And you mentioned it was like 2 days of filming. So at the end of those 48 hours, how much footage is there? Like, I think the video is what, 4 or 5 minutes, maybe 7 minutes long. How much is whittled down to get to that length?
Yeah. So I would say compared to the average project, probably not as much footage as we would on average, because I had very specific storyboard shots in mind. So I knew exactly what we needed. And then there was some creative leeway with the filmmakers there shooting some ideas, things they thought would work well for certain shots. But there was definitely a lot of footage to whittle through. For me, on that specific project, I didn't do the majority of the editing. My friend Chris Romrell did a lot of the editing, because with fight scenes, a lot of stunt people will say this, they're always worried with how people are going to edit them, because to make a good fight scene look well, it has to be edited the right way. And so to make sure it was edited the right way, Chris Romrell, my friend, was willing to help me sort of do the editing with the fight scene so that it could be as good as possible and capture the vision of how he choreographed the fights in the first place.
And but more often than not, like, would you normally do your own editing, or did you have like an editor or something like that?
Yeah. On most other projects, I would do my own editing. That specific project, yeah, I had him, had Chris do the editing. But in general, when I'm whittling down my own video footage for other projects, when I'm doing the editing myself, for me, it was just basically just going through all the footage and just finding those moments where I feel like I look the best in my performance. That was usually my main priority. I'm not usually looking so much for like the best camera angle. Sometimes that would be the case because someone would capture a really cool angle of what I'm doing. But most of the time, because I was kind of self-conscious about how I appeared on camera, how my performance looked, I always prioritized the best looking shot where I performed it the best. If there was a better shot, but I didn't perform it as well, but it was still passable, I would still usually go for where I performed it better if I was the one editing it. If I had someone else editing it, it was sometimes they're picking out the best camera angles, and I would either, you know, ask them to do a different one, or I would let them go with it, you know, because I didn't want to be too nitpicky about it. So,
and so at your peak, then how often were you posting videos? Because I'm sure it took a amount of time to like to prep for a video, to film a video, to edit. It's like, was it weekly? Was it kind of sporadically? Like, what was your schedule kind of looking like at your peak?
Yeah. So I had these couple months a few years back where I got kind of crazy with what I was doing schedule wise. I started a gaming channel, and I also started a vlogging channel. And I had been doing the vlogging channel pretty much the whole time, but that was very sporadic. I always focused on just a weekly video on my main channel. But then eventually I just felt like I needed to be doing more content. And so I started producing 3 videos a week on my main channel. So that was either tutorials or like kind of demo reel from my training from that week, you know, just a fun video, or a themed video, something to be cool and entertaining. And then on my vlog, I was doing pretty much daily vlogs along with filming those videos that I was posting on my other channel. And then along with that, I was posting, I think, nightly gaming videos on my gaming channel just to try and get a push with that. that only lasted 2 weeks until I was completely burnt out. I don't know how I thought that was a good idea. In the moment, I was super passionate and driven to be producing, I think, what was it, like 13 videos a week. And, but after 2 weeks, I'm like, okay, this isn't sustainable. I'm going to lose it if I try and keep going at this. So then I kind of dropped back to a more, just went back to a weekly basis. Sometimes I'd jump up to 2 videos a week on my main channel. And my vlogging channel was always just, even though that's, I think, almost up to 100,000 subscribers, it was always just, it was just there for people who wanted to see whatever I was doing on the side. It was the stuff that wasn't curated in a sense. It was like, oh, this is for the people who just want to see whatever else I'm doing, who don't care that it's not high quality or whatever else. So I could just kind of throw stuff onto my vlogging channel. And then my gaming channel, I kind of just stopped doing, but would maybe post a video every once in a while just for fun. I never expected that one to really go anywhere, but yeah, it was at one point I was really trying to build all those things. But once again, all my focus went back to my main channel because I realized that's where I needed to focus my attention to really keep that one going good and growing.
And then on the main channel, what made a good thumbnail on the main channel? Like when you launch a video that you know has a lot of potential to go viral, like what do you look for in that thumbnail that's going to make people click on it?
I would usually look for thumbnails that really captured an exciting mid shot flip or trick of something I'm doing, something that was very clear and cool looking, almost like if you were to imagine a superhero in a comic book, every frame the superhero is in some really cool pose. There's no in between drawings of the character, like after he's punched and then he's just kind of like relaxing his punch or whatever. There's always it's always in the most dynamic part of the movement. And so taking that same idea, I would just look for the most dynamic tricks I would do in the video and then try and create screenshots from the most dynamic moment. Do I look like a superhero in this moment? And how can I crop it in or adjust the coloring or whatever to really make it pop so that when people see it, it looks like the page of a comic book superhero, but it's a parkour guy, the comic book parkour guy. So that's kind of how I'd think about it.
And I talk to a lot of YouTubers and even TikTokers, and they always say, like, sometimes you post a video that you think is going to do really well and it does awful, but sometimes you post a video that you don't care about and it takes off for millions of views. But I feel like in your case, it's probably the reverse of that, where you probably knew going into a lot of your viral videos that, like, this video is going to go viral. Like, you've got to know with the Deadpool, the Spider-Man, the Star Wars videos, like, those are going to do well going into it, right? I'm assuming. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there are videos you thought were going to take off that didn't, but I feel like you probably have a bit of a unique case with that.
Yeah, I mean, that was it, especially in the beginning when I first started producing these videos with Cameron helping me and with what they were doing. I had that expectation, like, okay, this video, it's a viral concept and I have people helping me produce it in a way that should really get it out there. And so in the beginning, that was definitely the case, where I could create a video and expect it to have a somewhat viral success. Over time, that became a bit harder to keep up, because I think people can only see a theme parkour video so many times, at least doing it in the same sort of way. And so over time, it became a bit more harder to predict. What usually would happen over time when I would do those types of videos is I'd first release them and they would seem like a flop. But then 2 years later, I'm looking at the views and they're in the millions of views. It just took 2 years to get there. So they no longer became like these viral spikes, but sort of these slow growth videos that just, you know, still keep getting views to this day. So once I realized that was happening, I had to change my perspective to not expect, you know, these viral pop videos, but more just like, okay, I'm creating this content that's, you know, I'm not going to see the rewards from right away, but it's a slow growth and it's part of maintaining my YouTube channel.
How do you, when you're working with a brand, how do you kind of explain and price that? You know, like I work in influencer marketing now. And, you know, a lot of influencer marketing managers, they want to see, like, they're looking for that quick return. They want to see downloads. They want to see conversions. But, like, how do you explain that to them where it's like, you're going to work with me and, like, you're going to get tons of views, over the next 700 plus days? Like, you're not going to see results in the 30-day window. Like, how do you explain that when you're working with a brand?
That's definitely a tougher one to explain, because a lot of brands' expectations are with goals for their sales to be within a certain time frame. And so if they're seeing your videos aren't hitting a certain amount of views within a certain time frame, it's simply going to affect how much they're willing to offer you for those brand deals. And so it definitely made it harder when that started happening to get the same level of brand deals with that. Some it didn't matter so much, because it wasn't about that rush sort of marketing on their side, but it definitely affected it on my end for a lot of brand deals. But a big part of me in selling my content to brands and selling, you know, kind of selling who I am in my YouTube channel, it was sort of a combination of the whole package they're getting, where it's not just my YouTube channel that they're showing their product on, but they're getting me personally, who at the time was a prominent parkour figurehead, promoting a product to this, you know, community, and then also just being an athlete in general, a professional athlete who can promote their product. So it's kind of coming at the angle of like a classical athlete sponsorship as well. So it's so I would try and sell all those different points to brands, and even offer ways for them to use footage of mine in their own marketing and product marketing. So yeah, a big part of it was just like, okay, where can I find all my value that's not just in my YouTube channel, but is also in me as a person, and what my skills and talents are, and how I'm showing off their product. If it's like shoes or a watch or something, they're going to be seeing their watch utilized in a way that they've probably never seen done before on any of the other YouTube channels. So I would always use that as a selling point. Like, you're going to see me performing, you know, in your product in a way that no one else is doing. And so it was just finding other ways at that point to sell what I'm doing to brands.
I think that's great. And I think that's an important thing for kind of smaller creators to hear, because I feel like they often get it twisted when it comes to monetizing as a creator, where they just think they need the views to get the kind of the CPM ads. But like you're saying, there's other ways, kind of what we talked about earlier, when collabing with channels that are bigger than you or whatever it might be, is finding where you can provide that unique value, not only using it for collabs, but using your unique value for brand deals and pitching brands yourself on like why these extra unique selling points are going to be beneficial to them. I really like that. I think that's great. You also said that with those videos, kind of they'll take 2 years maybe to really kind of get some velocity. In that 2-year window, are you going back and changing the thumbnail, the title, the description, the tags, or anything like that to try and help it get a boost? Or do you just post it once and kind of let it go?
I've done both. Some of them I've just let go, because it seems like they've found their steady growth. But I've definitely experimented with a lot of previous videos to see if that could change anything. I never found a lot of success in trying to change the thumbnails later on. But I'm sure it could have had some influence. I think it just became, if I'm also worrying about new content I'm creating while also trying to, you know, manage old content, it just became a little too much for me to try and think about. So I wasn't doing that all the time, but I would occasionally experiment with those.
And what analytics would you look at when you'd post a video? Like, was there certain things you'd see, like if it hit a certain percent of click-through rate or watch time, that you know this video is going to go viral? Like, what did you look for in your analytics?
My analytics, I would usually watch for, usually I would, in the beginning, it was definitely watching for how many views I was getting in the first day. If the video was getting a lot of views in the first day, it was like, it gave me a projection of how well my video would do over the next 2 weeks and couple months. And I could predict whether it was going to be a viral video or not. Later on, as that changed over time, it became more about seeing, yeah, the initial watch time rate of my videos and tracking the views, but also are these views I'm getting, are they watching a good portion of the video? And if not, if I see a drop off, a pretty quick drop off, I have a pretty good sense that the video is probably not going to grow over time as much as, say, videos that have a higher watch time rate, and then they'll likely, you know, have better success long term.
What separates those videos for you? Like, what makes a video hold people's retention for a long period of time versus one that doesn't?
That's one I never knew exactly, especially later on when I couldn't predict what would get a lot of views anymore. I would occasionally do a tutorial, like I'd experiment with a new video that I'd have no expectation of it getting a lot of views or going viral. It was just like, okay, here's another tutorial to maintain my content stream. And I would post it, and then I would check on it 6 months later, and out of nowhere, I see that it's, you know, up to 500,000 views. I'm like, where did that come from? I had no expectation of that happening with that video. And then other videos, I'm like, oh yeah, I expect this to get, you know, 1 million views in maybe a year or something. And then they stop at 30,000 views. And so it's just, it became hard to predict what the videos would do, but it seems like a big part of what would hold people's attention longer was doing videos that were, I don't know, it's been different for different videos. So some videos, like if it was a themed video, it was just being very, you know, to the point, like I'm in this costume doing cool tricks, and then that was it. It has a build up to some epic trick at the end, and then it's done. With some of the tutorial content I would do, some of the videos I started having success with were longer form tutorials where I was doing like 15 minute tutorials. The one I did specifically called anyone can learn, or how anyone can learn how to do parkour. It was something along those lines. It was 10 parkour moves anyone can learn. And so it was taking 10 parkour moves, doing a basic tutorial on each move, which made the video come out to be about 15 minutes. And I just was worried that that was way too long for a parkour video, but I'm like, I'm going to try something new, see what happens. And I think the title really helped out, being like a 10, a number. People seem to like numbers in titles. But then also it became a challenge, like 10 parkour moves anyone can learn. I got a lot of comments like, well, what about people who don't have legs, or, you know, things like that. And so it became kind of a controversial title for a video, which I think also influenced its growth. And at the same time, it was 15 minutes long, whereas before I'd only been uploading like 3 to 5 minute long tutorials, but people were watching through it. And so that surprised me, but over time, it's now one of my highest viewed videos on my own channel, just from that steady growth of people maybe wanting to learn parkour, and it also just hitting the right factors for the thumbnail and the title all kind of going into it.
And it's also an evergreen video. Like, you can always go back and learn these parkour moves at any point in time, you know? And I think that's the thing that a lot of your videos have, you know, like, I know sometimes it's like in relation to a movie you'll make, like some of your theme videos, but it's such a popular theme. Like, the theme you're picking is such a popular thing in pop culture that like it can carry on. Like Star Wars is pop, Spider-Man, Deadpool, like these have legs that will carry beyond just like when the movie comes out. And so I think that's been also a big key for your videos. They're evergreen. They're not just tied to like Halloween 2017 parkour. Like, that's done after a month. There's just a lot of runway with your videos. And I'm curious now, like, so at what point then, so you're doing all these videos, you know, your channel 1.3, I think right now it's 1.39 million subscribers. You have hundreds of millions of views. At what point did you kind of start to slow things down and focus more so on stunt work than YouTube?
I started transitioning into stunt work when I started seeing that as, one, something I've always wanted to do and pursue. Since I was a kid, even when I first started parkour and started getting good at it, I'm like, oh, one day I want to be a stuntman. The first time I saw a Spider-Man movie, you know, when I was 10 or however old I was, it was like, oh, that would be so cool to be a stuntman. But I had no vision of how to become a stuntman back then. So that was always in my back of my mind. I was actually, when I did the video with Devin Supertramp, it was always my goal to become a stunt performer. And that's why I set up my YouTube channel, to get promotional, you know, to get more viewers to my channel to promote me is ultimately to be a stuntman. It was only when I started making money on my YouTube videos that I kind of got sidetracked from that goal of becoming a stuntman to make videos, because it was a ton of fun. It was doing what I dreamed of, is creating this awesome video content and making good money from doing it, which is, for me, was even cooler than doing stunts at the time, because I'm just working for myself. I'm doing what I want. I don't have to do what someone else is telling me to do. I can do whatever sounds fun to me. And so that was definitely a dream, to be able to live out that YouTube career during that time period. But over time, I also started, my YouTube channel started going downhill earnings wise. I just, in the last few years, it's just been sort of a slow downhill decline as far as how much I'm making on monetization from YouTube videos, as well as brand deals reaching out to me, or, you know, what I can get from brand deals. So there was a decline in sort of my income from that. And there were things I was doing to try and mitigate that, to try and, you know, change things up, figure out what was going on. And, I think a big part of me was also like, you know, maybe this is also a time for me to look at other options. Cause at this point I'd literally put everything in my life into YouTube. I didn't go to college or anything like that. So I didn't have any backup careers. And so, but I knew I did always want to be a stuntman, and I was pursuing stunts kind of on the side here and there. I do low budget, like stunt work for movies in Utah on the side occasionally. But over time, I saw that as a more, as you know, maybe this is an opportunity to push me in that direction, because it is something I've wanted to do. My friend Chris Romrell, he got hired to work in Georgia as Chris Pratt's stunt double. And so he was making a lot of connections as a stunt person out in Georgia. And so eventually I'm like, all right, that's going to be my plan. I'm going to move to Georgia and start pursuing stunt work full time. And I'm still going to do YouTube. You know, I'm still going to do YouTube and try and keep up with it. But I need to start, you know, I need to start my journey into the stunt world and see where I can go with that. And so there was definitely, when that happened, I think that also added to the decline a little bit faster, because then I was putting more of my time and resources into stunt training and kind of just pursuing stunts. And a lot went into moving my family to Georgia, and, you know, it was kind of a whole crazy time of my life. and during that whole period, I'm still keeping up with YouTube, but it's, you know, it's becoming less, it's like the time I'm putting into YouTube is just becoming less worth it. The amount of time and money I used to put into videos, I could always expect a payoff after a certain amount of time. And I was just seeing less and less of that over time. And so, so now I'm kind of at a point where I've really been able to start taking off with my stunt career in the last 2 years, where I've been able to work on some of the Marvel Disney Plus shows like Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki, and some more shows that I can't talk about I've worked on this year that I'm really excited about. So I'm really excited about where that's going. But, you know, I also have this little bit of a, you know, this sadness in not being able to keep my YouTube going at the level it once was. And I make theories about, you know, what all contributed to that. You know, I think there are elements of, you know, at one time parkour being very popular and trendy. And over time, it seems like parkour just isn't as popular as it once was during that time I was really successful on my YouTube channel. And so I think I could have prevented that decline had I been willing to branch out a bit more and experiment maybe with more types of video content that didn't just depend on the parkour community. But it's also hard to say, you know, exactly everything that contributed into it. But it's, you know, now I'm at a point where I still post tutorials and videos to my YouTube channel, because I still, a big part of doing YouTube was also giving back to the community. I gained so much from parkour in my own life that I want to make sure I, you know, give back to the world in a sense, so that other people have that opportunity to find something they can love just as much as I did. And so I'll still do videos, but it's no longer to the extent where I'm investing a lot of time and effort into those videos. I'll create sort of compilation videos of my training into stunts. I've started incorporating more of my stunt training into my videos. And I think in the future, if I do start investing more effort into my YouTube channel, it'll be more in a stunt perspective, what I'm doing with stunts, which is still, there's a lot of crossover with parkour, more so than just only being focused on parkour. So there's definitely that I have kind of on the back burner thinking about for the future. And it's like, how would my channel look if I, you know, made it much more about stunts and maybe making like fight sequences with cool stunts and parkour moves incorporated. You know, I definitely have ideas and things I'm thinking about, but it's also at this point, like with getting more busy with stunt work and things like that, it's like, okay, when, at what point do I feel like I know what I want to do where I can invest the time and resources to maybe take my YouTube channel in a new direction. So yeah, kind of long story short, you know, my channel was super successful, went downhill a little bit, transitioned into stunts, but I don't think I'm done with YouTube. I've loved my time with YouTube and I'm looking forward to what opportunities arise with that in the future. I'm always kind of keeping an eye out for that and just, you know, always brainstorming in my head, like, you know, one of these days, something's just going to click where I know, like, okay, this is the direction I want to do with my YouTube channel. But in the meantime, yeah, I'm training stunts and living out here in Georgia, doing what I can with it.
I don't know what the legalities of it would be, but like, is there a way to merge kind of your stunt work with your channel and like talking about working on some of the productions you've worked on, like City Work and some of the Marvel shows? Like if you did like a stunt breakdown where like you can show it in the show and then talk about like how you did it behind the scenes. Like, I don't know if that's a possibility, but I feel like that could still be like, I know you used to do like the Q&As on your vlog channel, like kind of like doing that style, but around working in the industry as a stunt professional.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. I do have to be careful with talking about those things, especially if they're on shows or movies that haven't come out yet. I like, there's some things I'm not even allowed to say I'm working on them at this point until they've come out. But yeah, there definitely is an element to that of things I can talk about. But yeah, like you've said, I've thought about those. It's just it's figuring out if that's how I want to curate my channel. Is that the direction I want to take it? And so yeah, it's definitely a good thought and something I've thought about. Maybe one day I'll end up on Corridor Digital Stuntman Reacts. That seems to have been getting popular lately. And I'm even taking like ideas from that. Like, is that something I could do? but there's also this element of like, I'm still kind of young in the industry as a stunt performer. And so within the stunt community, I'm also trying not to come across as someone who I'm not, you know, I'm not like a lot of the stunt performers they have on their show or have been in the industry for decades. And so I want to make sure I'm not talking in a way as if I'm one of them, you know, in a sense, but definitely from the perspective that, you know, here's my experience coming into the stunt industry and becoming a part of the process. I'll definitely have to keep that in mind and just, yeah, keep thinking about it as I move forward.
How often do you look back on your time on YouTube, you know, from the days, those early days back in 2008, even your audition for American Ninja Warrior, you know, the peak of your channel, trying to post like 13 videos every 2 weeks. Like, how often do you look back on the whole journey?
I don't know, maybe once a month. I don't know. There's not a set time, but I'll definitely look back on it occasionally and just either reminisce about the highlights. I'll go back and watch old videos, just remember those times with friends that were creating these awesome projects. I have a 7-year-old daughter and 5-year-old son. And so I'll show them some of the videos that I've done and that, you know, I'll still put together. One of my latest YouTube videos I did a couple weeks ago, just as a fun little experiment, is I made a video with my 7-year-old daughter teaching kids how to do the ninja roll. And I made it a YouTube kids video. I kind of checked that box to make it show up for YouTube kids. And so I don't know, maybe there's a market for that, but I figured, you know, I have a daughter who's getting into it and having fun with it. And I spend a lot of time with my family. So that's also another angle, you know, I've thought about is like, oh, you know, maybe it could be like my kids doing stuff with me and, you know, creating more kid relatable content. But you know, it's still just a process of a process I'm currently in and thinking about it. But yeah, it's definitely, I do like going back and thinking about it, the memories and the crazy things I did. I have done some stunts back then where I'm like, can't believe I did that. I shouldn't have done that, but I did it and it was awesome. But it was definitely a bit reckless.
What was the one you did, something like a somersault on a rooftop or something at one point? I don't even think that was on video. Like on the edge of a building or something like that.
Yeah. It was in China, and it was for this, it was actually for a commercial I was working on with for a China real estate company. They had me traveling all over to different hotels and properties they owned all around China to do parkour across all their rooftops to kind of show off the different locations, utilizing a parkour athlete. And we were in this city on top of this probably 10-story building. And I always like scaring people and showing off, and I'm really comfortable at heights. So I'll do things where I'll jump to the edge of the building while people are like, aren't really paying attention. So they like, you know, they jump or, you know, think like, oh, he's falling, but he's not, you know, I like messing around with people that way. But then there was this moment where I saw this little ledge outcropping from the building. And in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, I roll on ledges all the time. I'll be completely comfortable to just roll on that, you know, over this 10-story drop and then come back and it'll be fine. But without really thinking about it, I went straight into the roll. And it was the most sloppy, ugly roll I'd ever done in my life. And I don't know what happened, but it just like, I landed on the edge of the ledge where like my legs were dangling off, just looking down. And in my head, I was like, I did not think that through. That was the stupidest thing I've ever done, because there was no reason to do it. I wanted to shock or awe people, you know? And so that was definitely one of those little moments where doing something very simple, but at such a dangerous height, that made me step back a little bit and kind of rethink how I approached stunts and think about stunts, because I don't always do that. Most of the time I'm very methodical and think very carefully about every stunt I perform so I can be as safe as possible. But in that moment, I just got a little carried away in my head, showing off, you know, with all the people around at heights. And then, yeah, doing that, I just didn't think it through and had one of those moments like, you know, that could have ended up much worse than it had. So, you know, it's that little moment to just help me be a little bit more cautious in the future, you know, nothing to ever like make me stop doing it, but definitely enough to give me pause anytime I'm about to try something stupid like that again.
Do you ever think about your impact on parkour as a whole? Like the number of kids that you've probably inspired to start parkour. Like you have, again, 1.39 million people that subscribe to you right now. Tens, hundreds of millions have watched your videos. If we factor in those Assassin's Creed videos where people might not necessarily know it's you, but just those videos that you were a part of, those have hundreds of billions of views. Like the amount of kids that have watched that and started parkour because of you. Like, do you ever think about that?
Oh yeah, definitely. That was one of my big motivations starting out, is just, you know, how many people I can reach to influence to learn parkour and do it safely. Over time though, especially recently, it's been really cool to see some of the results of that, because oftentimes it's like a lot of people would, you know, a lot of my followers would follow my channel, but then they would move on from it, maybe, you know, get into skateboarding or other sports. But recently, this is weird because this has happened very recently, where I've had multiple stunt people that I've met who are younger stunt people, you know, like in their early 20s, getting into the industry, who have specifically told me that my videos influenced them in learning parkour and eventually getting into stunts and being where they are there with me. We're working together on this movie or this show, and it's because of me that, you know, they're there doing that, or maybe not just because of me, but my videos definitely had an influence on their early journeys when they were like 12 or 14 years old, trying to learn parkour, or learn, you know, cool moves. And then eventually being a stunt person and telling me that I had a big influence on them. That those moments hit me recently where I'm like, wow, that's really cool. It hadn't even occurred to me that, you know, it's been long enough that could be happening, where, you know, from videos I posted almost 10 years ago, there's now stunt people who use those videos in their journey to help them learn parkour and are now, you know, working in the stunt industry, and I'm seeing what they're doing with that. And so it's definitely extremely rewarding to see that. When I go to parkour gyms, a lot of kids will still come up to me and tell me that, oh, I watch your videos and you help me learn parkour. And so I definitely, that's definitely one of the most rewarding things about what I've done on YouTube, is seeing the influence I have had on people.
Oh, I bet. I mean, I never made the jump to actually doing parkour, but I can remember watching your videos growing up. Like I said, in high school, like even those Assassin's Creed ones and some of your videos, like I can remember seeing them, and I used to think it was the coolest thing ever. So I just think that's why I asked, because you're right. It's been almost 10 years now. So like you were able to see kind of the impact that you've had now, which I think is really cool. But I know we're a little over time here, so I'm going to jump to my last question that I ask everyone at the end of every interview. And so pretend you have a crystal ball. You can ask this crystal ball any question. You'll get the 100% honest answer. What is one question you want to know the answer to?
You know, on the side, I really enjoy learning about everything science related. I love learning about space and physics, and biology, and just how it all works. I think for me, a big question would just be, well, I don't know, there's hundreds of questions in that realm, but it's definitely in just understanding the nature of everything, of consciousness. That's what it is. Lately I've been getting a lot into understanding the nature of consciousness through like meditation and other things like that. And I definitely love to understand the nature of it, because it's such, you know, when you look at the brain and how it works, and then you look at conscious experience, you know, how do we connect those? And so I'm very fascinated by that. I'd love to know how that works and the motivations behind it, because I'm really fascinated by those things. Because ultimately that's our whole reality, is what our consciousness is. And so understanding that, I think, is a big part of understanding like who we are and why we are and reality itself, in a sense.
No, I like that. I like that question a lot. I think it's an important one to ask. And I think no one's ever asked a question like that in that way before. So I like that question. I think it's a good one. But I want to thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast tonight. I want to give you the floor. Where can the people find you? Plug anything and everything you got right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So Ronnie Street Stunts is my social media handle on YouTube, Instagram. I'm posting a lot on Instagram right now, just with my stunt training in my stories and things like that. So if you want to see what I'm up to in my stunt training, but otherwise, yeah, YouTube, it's Ronnie Street Stunts, and Facebook, Ronnie Street Stunts. Yeah.
Awesome, man. We'll make sure everything's linked in the show notes down below so people can find it. But I want to thank you once again for taking time to come on the podcast. And I want to thank everybody for listening. Whether you've listened the entire way through or you only listen to bits and pieces, I really appreciate you taking time to check this out. Everyone, do me a big favor. Go and follow Ronnie. I'll make sure everything's linked in the show notes down below. Like I said, if you'd like to follow me, you can find me everywhere on social media at The Jacob Kelly. Feel free to come and say hello. My DMs are always open. As always, today's podcast is powered by TrueFan. Thank you once again for listening. We'll talk soon.